From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. More than half of all American adults have now gotten at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine as of this week, according to the CDC. The vaccines dramatically reduce the risk of ending up in the hospital or dying of the disease, but some minor side effects are to be expected. Those could include fatigue, fever, chills, or a very sore arm. There are other side effects being reported, though, that were overlooked or not asked about in clinical trials for the shots, particularly side effects for women. Some people who menstruate have been reporting their cycles temporarily changed after receiving the vaccine and have been sharing their experiences on social media. Now, two researchers are stepping up to collect data they felt was missing on how the vaccine could potentially affect periods. They join us now. I'd like to welcome Kate Clancy back to the show. She's an associate professor of anthropology at the University of Illinois. Her research focuses on reproductive justice, including how environmental stressors can affect menstruation. Kate, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks so much.
I'd also like to welcome Catherine Lee. She's a postdoctoral research fellow in public health sciences at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. Welcome, Catherine.
Thanks for having me.
And we are also joined by health journalist Tara Haley. She is the author of Vaccination Investigation, The History and Science of Vaccines. Tara, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thank you.
Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation as well. Did the COVID vaccine change your cycle? Give us a call, 800-222-9455. Were you surprised to hear that women's menstrual cycles were not asked about in clinical trials? Or maybe you just have a question for our guests. Again, the number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. Catherine, I'm going to begin with you. Can you tell me when you first realized there could be a connection between the vaccine and changes in menstruation?
Sure. So for me, this started with my own personal experience and speaking with a few friends who were also on the earlier side of getting vaccinated. You remember at the beginning of the time that we were, the vaccines were rolling out, we were really unsure, like, how fatigued would people be? How sore is a sore arm for this vaccine? So a friend and I got vaccinated in February, and we just decided that we'd text each other about our experiences. And a few days after we were vaccinated, we both happened to get menstrual symptoms that were very different from our usual experiences. So I started asking other people that I knew or suspected had been vaccinated and suspected would tell me about their periods, if they had noticed anything, and then reached out to Kate because of her area of focus being the menstrual cycle. She was my dissertation advisor, so I know her pretty well, and just asked if she'd heard anything or if she could think of any potential mechanisms why we might see people having some changes in their menstrual cycle due to this vaccine.
And Kate, you posted your own experience to Twitter and got quite a few responses. What were you hearing from people?
We really heard three major classes of responses. One that I feel like has been actually the most underreported, but I think is really important to talk about, is that a lot of people, in particular trans people on gender-affirming hormones, people on long-acting reversible contraceptives, and even postmenopausal people who have not bled for years are experiencing some bleeding events. And so, we're talking about people who are past menstruators who now are having at least one menstrual period after the vaccine. This is not, again, part of what we're studying is not that these are long-term or permanent effects. These are transient, completely normal immune responses. But of course, that's an incredibly surprising and in some cases, really upsetting event. So the fact that we were hearing from some people that was happening was interesting to us and made it really worthy of study and worthy of paying attention to these voices. And then, of course, among current menstruators, we heard a variety of things. There's still plenty of people who say they have no changes in their periods after the vaccine. And I think it's important to note that there's plenty of people who are reporting really no change. But among the people who do, which is a pretty large amount, the majority are, this is anecdotal just from what we're hearing before we have a chance to analyze our data yet. But what we're seeing is that most of the people who are having an experience seem to be having sort of an earlier and or heavier period. But then we are also hearing from some folks who are having a loss of period or a lighter period.
Catherine, can you talk a little bit about the survey then that you created to help track some of these side effects that people who menstruate are reporting?
Yeah, so the survey is more about people reporting their experiences necessarily instead of tracking per se.
Sure.
We started out just with a small survey that Kate and I went back and forth refining, and then we went through the IRB process so that our research was met all of the University of Illinois ethical approvals and things like that.
I say IRB, that institutional review, it's just to make sure you're not doing anything unethical in how you're conducting the survey. For listeners who might not be familiar with that acronym.
Yes, sorry about that. and so about 2 weeks ago today, we got the survey up, and we really anticipated from our prior experience asking people about their periods that, you know, we would get some interest from some folks, and we really weren't sure what types of experiences people would want to tell us about. So our survey has some big text boxes for people to tell us basically whatever they want to about their periods normally, their periods after vaccines. And we have been overwhelmed at the number of people reaching out to us by email or and taking the survey, just who want to share their experiences with their periods and their periods after vaccine.
And Catherine, Kate mentioned a moment ago about some of the different responses that she was getting, and a lot of it struck us that a lot of the reporting around this is talking about the history of women's exclusion from clinical trials and women's side effects, but the survey is very clear to say people who menstruate. Can you just talk a little bit more about that and how this is not just an issue that affects only people who identify as women?
Yeah, I think it's really important that we not dismiss the experiences of trans men, of gender non-binary folks. This is a biological process that happens to a lot of people. It doesn't happen to everyone. And there are women who do not menstruate for a number of different reasons. And so our survey really wanted to capture menstrual experiences after people were vaccinated in the most inclusive way possible.
Okay, let me take a moment to reintroduce my guests. If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the COVID-19 vaccine and some women who are reporting afterward that one of the side effects they're experiencing are changes in their menstruation. We want to invite you to join our conversation at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. We're speaking with Kate Clancy, who's an associate professor at the U of I, Katie Lee, who's a postdoctoral research fellow in public health sciences at Washington University in St. Louis, and Tara Haley, who is a science and health journalist and the author of Vaccination Investigation, the History and Science of Vaccines. And Tara, can you talk a little bit about why we don't know more about how the vaccine could affect a woman's menstrual cycle?
Yeah, the biggest reason is that we simply, the question wasn't asked during clinical trials. I do want to emphasize right at the start, we have to be cautious about our language when discussing this, because a lot of people are calling it side effect of the vaccine or saying that the vaccine affected them. And the problem is we don't actually know that. We can't say it is a side effect of the vaccine, and we can't say that the vaccine is the cause of this. All we know is that there is a substantial proportion of women who are saying, or a substantial number of women, we don't even know the proportion, of menstruators saying that they are experiencing these changes in their menstrual cycles after having gotten the vaccine. So that's part of what's so challenging here to discuss, is that the fact that we don't have the data, we don't have any information from the clinical trials indicating whether this was experienced by a higher proportion of people who received the vaccine rather than those who received the placebo. That's part of the crux of the issue. That's part of the problem. When the clinical trials were developed in their protocols, they were, you know, the people who developed the questions that were asked about side effects have standard side effect questions they ask, or adverse events is what they're called during the trial. During the course of that, they also ask participants if they're experiencing any other things, like what else is going on, basically. And that's how they pick up unusual signals. It's called safety signals. They find out about things that they may not have been expecting. And then they can incorporate those questions into their protocols. The problem is that some women have already reported that they tried to mention that they had experienced heavier flow or breakthrough bleeding or longer periods, and their experiences were not necessarily written down. And we don't know how often that happened. We don't know how often they were simply not written down by the person who was taking the information versus how many women, or excuse me, menstruators, I have to, we just don't have the information. I sound like a broken record because that's the frustrating part.
But it sounds to me like I'm sorry to interrupt you. What I'm hearing, I think, is that it sounds like they prompt for certain things that they know are maybe common side effects, headache, nausea, fever, chills. But then there are other things that they don't prompt for and things that, you know, there's more open-ended. Maybe those weren't reported. Should we be surprised that potential menstrual effects was not something that were prompted for in terms of an adverse reaction in the clinical trials?
I guess it depends on what you mean by should you be surprised. Based on past vaccine trials, no, because it's never been a question, to my knowledge, that's ever typically been asked. That said, it's an experience that happens to approximately 50% of the population during a certain age range. So you would expect that something that is that common and relevant to health would be asked about. So I think the problem is that a lot of women's issues in general, a lot of things associated with the physiology of the female body have not been addressed in medicine in general. And this has been an example of that.
Yeah. And Tara, you've written about how the refusal to investigate women's experiences in the U.S. in this way was actually codified in 1977 when a U.S. Food and Drug Administration policy recommended excluded women of childbearing age from phase one and phase two drug trials. Why was that? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there were a couple of reasons. The biggest reason, honestly, was the tragedy of thalidomide that occurred in the 1950s. Thalidomide was a drug that was prescribed allegedly to treat morning sickness, but in fact, it led to differences in limbs and deformations in the babies that were born because it wasn't properly tested. It was never prescribed in the United States, but it was prescribed in many other countries. And it caused a big scare because it showed problems with not knowing what could happen with a drug when it wasn't tested appropriately in women who were pregnant. The problem with that was that we now had, they then created their own problem where they didn't have data on any drugs at all because women were completely excluded from the trials. And they realized that was a problem in around 1983. They started to recognize, well, okay, women have different things going on in their bodies. They metabolize drugs differently. They have different hormone levels. And these things can all have an impact on how different kinds of medications affect them. So we needed that data. And we don't have any data on trans men or maybe menopausal women who are in the process of going through menopause. So there was even less data on the subgroups within the group of menstruators. And that was what eventually led to a re-examination of that policy. In the meantime, however, even while they were starting to recognize that women were underrepresented, there was a lot of paternalism in the entire industry of doing medical trials and a belief that it was inconvenient to include women because their hormone levels might supposedly interfere with the drugs and then we wouldn't be able to accurately analyze how well the drug worked, which is sort of a self-defeating prospect. Well, that's the point. We need to know that. But that's not how it was thought. Instead, it was thought that the average white male's body was good enough to be a model for all other bodies. And that was just an example of what happens when you don't have diversity in an area.
Huh. Fascinating. Okay, we need to take a break here. We're going to continue this conversation after a break. If you're just joining us, we're talking about reports from some people that the COVID-19 vaccine might temporarily change their menstrual cycle. This was something that was not asked about, as we've just heard, in clinical trials. We're talking with Kate Clancy and Catherine Lee, who are researchers who've developed a survey to collect data on these potential side effects. We're also speaking with science writer and health journalist Tara Haley about a longer history of women's side effects being ignored or not documented in clinical trials. Listeners, we want to hear from you, especially if you are somebody who menstruates, have experienced any side effects. You're willing to talk about it with us. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And I didn't say, but of course, related to the COVID vaccine is what we're talking about. You can also always tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. More to come after a short break. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by AARP Illinois, featuring Disrupt Disparities, an initiative working to bring about policy, systemic, and structural changes for older Americans of color. More information on this multi-year project at disruptdisparitiesil.com.
This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we're talking about reports from some people that the COVID-19 vaccine could at least temporarily affect their menstrual cycle. This was a side effect that was not asked about in clinical trials. Kate Clancy and Catherine Lee are researchers who've developed a survey to collect data on this potential phenomena, I guess we'll call it. We're also speaking with science writer and health journalist Tara Haley about a longer history of women's side effects being ignored or not documented in clinical trials. I don't mean to minimize it by saying potential phenomena. It's clear that some people are experiencing in this. It just may or may not rise to the level of what, you know, health experts categorize as a side effects. Listeners of the vaccine, listeners, you can join our conversation at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. And Kate, to that point, maybe, what would you say to doctors who say, well, you know, there are a lot of factors that can change the menstrual cycle, at least temporarily, stress, hormonal changes, illness, et cetera. I wonder what your response is to that.
Gosh, I have so many responses to that.
Okay.
I think the first that I find really interesting is that something that I've noticed is that when we want to sort of dismiss a lived experience, especially the lived experience of a female identified person, we often attribute whatever their experience is to, quote, stress. And I have to say, you know, my inbox right now is full, I mean, completely full of emails of people sharing their experiences of having, you know, a really different menstrual cycle post-vaccine, reaching out to a doctor and having a doctor tell them it's just stress. And what so many of these emails also say is, listen, I've been going through this pandemic for a year. I am actually at my least stressed right now because right. I'm partially protected with this vaccine, or I'm now fully protected with this vaccine. Like, to call it stress is to say that this past year is not, you know, where my menstrual cycle has not been doing these different things is not important to pay attention to. The one other thing I'd say is that, you know, menstruating people can, you know, from menarche to menopause are actively menstruating for up to 20% of their lives. If you consider how long menstruation is and the frequency with which it occurs for many, many people, we understand what's happening to our bodies and we're pretty familiar with what's normal for us. And so when they get discounted by, oh, it's just X, as opposed to, no, this might actually be, there might be an association here. You know, that's, it's just, it bothers me that the way that the medical structure, you know, in terms of medical education and the way it's sort of set up is sort of designed to not listen, when to me that seems like the first thing that a provider should do. And to be fair, I've also heard from a number of people who've also had really affirming experiences with their doctors. I know that there are definitely really caring ones who are listening. But, you know, it bothers me when people just immediately do not think about the fact that there are some real biological mechanisms at play.
And, you know, people in the medical community, a lot of research seems to just associate the menstrual cycle with fertility or reproduction, when there are a lot of other aspects to this biological process. I mean, are there other areas of medicine missing something by not doing more research into the menstrual cycle?
So our whole lab actually, and we're certainly not the only ones, there are plenty of people who do this research. We study the effects of environmental stressors on, and we use the word stress differently than sort of that common way, that the ways that environmental stressors influence menstrual cycles. Some people call the menstrual cycle a vital sign, because variability or changes from what is typical for you can indicate that there are things going on in your life worth paying attention to. But broadly, the three categories of environmental stressors that we know influence the menstrual cycle are energetic, especially constraint, like if you're not eating enough or you're moving around a lot, immunological. So if you are experiencing a major immune response, say to a vaccine or to getting ill. And then the third one is psychosocial. And so we have lots and lots of data. Like I could point to hundreds, if not thousands of papers that are looking at these kinds of associations. So it's certainly not that these things aren't out there, and that, you know, that PhD level researchers haven't been making this data available for quite some time.
Tara, I wonder, when it comes to misinformation around the vaccine, do you worry that not asking participants in the vaccine clinical trials about their periods could contribute to that?
I do worry about that, because if people have an experience that they weren't expecting, and then they share that with others, as is happening right now, they start to wonder, well, what else was not asked about? Or what does this mean? Could this have other impacts that I don't know about? And that uncertainty is one of the things that can feed vaccine hesitancy. You know, there's a lot of different factors that go into vaccine hesitancy, but a big part of them is simply uncertainty, not even just fear necessarily, but just uncertainty. I don't know what will happen. And when you leave out any information that could prepare people for what might happen, that can contribute to hesitancy. I do wonder, are there people out there who have decided to not get the second shot because they're not sure how it's going to affect them? We don't know, because we don't, again, the data was not collected. And I think something else that's important to consider here is that, again, going back to the idea that no one thought to collect the data, it's, you have to wonder, did they realize that this could be important? You know, I don't know who was in charge of asking these questions or developing them, but I wonder, you know, did it occur to them? And then they figured, we don't need to ask about that. It's not even a big deal. And I'm not saying anyone did do that. The fact that we don't know is what's so frustrating. The fact that we don't have that information.
You know, and Tara, we got a message from a listener as we are going live on air today, who said that this is irresponsible for us to be having this conversation, drawing this connection between changes to the menstrual cycle and potential connection between changes to the menstrual cycles and vaccines, when we are trying to get everyone vaccinated as a public health imperative. I don't know if any of you want to respond to that. Tara, if you want to begin, what would you say to that?
I would say that the most important thing to begin addressing vaccine hesitancy is transparency, being extremely open about what we know, what we don't know, what we want to know, what we need to know, what we're trying to learn. And we can't do that if we shut down a conversation about something that is occurring to a subset of the population and we don't know how common it is. If you're not being transparent, if we're not being, you know, if we're not paying attention to this and having these discussions, that is actually what increases vaccine hesitancy. And I think it's irresponsible not to discuss it, because then people start to get uneasy. They start to feel distrustful. Oh, well, what else are you not talking to me about? In this case, I think there's an oversight. I think there's built-in paternalism to the system, but that doesn't mean it's anything nefarious. I don't think there's anyone who explicitly said we should not ask about this because if it happens, it will scare people. I don't think anything like that happened at all. I think this is far more far more in a symptom of an overall society that was built on the experiences of white men as being the default. And it requires active effort to deconstruct that, to take it down and consider the broader experiences of people. And that has to be done with transparency. We already see that there are subgroups of different types in terms of race, ethnicity, age, even political affiliation that are associated with different types of vaccine hesitancy. And that's partly because of a history where different people's experiences were not taken into consideration during the trials. So it's absolutely not irresponsible to be talking about this. It would be irresponsible to say it's definitely a side effect because we don't know that for a fact yet. But to not discuss it at all is what would actually be more irresponsible.
Catherine, I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that.
Yeah, I think one thing that's really important is that whether or not we collect this data or we talk about this, it's like Tara said, it's happening to so many people. And Kate and I both have gotten so many emails from so many people who were surprised that this happened to them, to their bodies. They thought something was significantly wrong with them because unexpected menstrual bleeding can be a sign of things like cancer. And so people were experiencing something that it sounds like is happening to a lot of people and being dismissed by their doctors because clearly it's just stress is what people are being told. And so they're very worried that something different is happening in their body that they aren't sure why it's happening. Just like if you were to randomly get a fever on any given day, you would be worried that you were sick. And because you know that a fever is something that can happen after the vaccine and it's well characterized, we understand what's happening. We understand that it happens to, you know, some large subset of people who get the vaccine, but again, not everyone. We are like, okay, I got the vaccine. You can process it and you get the fever. And you say, okay, this vaccine really, you know, knocked me on my butt for a couple of days. But if that were to continue longer than what we expect for the vaccine, you would still go to a doctor. And all we're saying is that if disruptions to menstrual cycles or menstrual cycles for people who normally don't have them is a temporary side effect that gets triggered by probably the immune response to the vaccine, it should be something that people understand can be happening to them, that they know what it should look like or could look like. They're prepared with pads or tampons or whatever they use to manage their menstrual health. And then they still have the ability to say, oh, it turns out what I'm experiencing is not what's happening to other people. Maybe I should still go talk to my doctor about it. So there's this really important way that it was happening to people and people were scared about their own health or surprised or experiencing dysphoria around it. And so we really think it's important to not try to hide things from people when we're talking about medical care and medical risk.
And I guess, Kate, last question to you. Don't know if you have anything you want to add anything to that, or just what are the next steps in your research here after responses are collected? Can people still take the survey?
The survey is still open. We certainly are at the point that we have enough responses that we could start to analyze them because we're at well over 30,000 responses at this point. But it's important to point out that the kind of survey we are doing is just like Tara said, you know, we are looking at associations. We are not able to look at causation, but what you hope to do in an associational study is start to see if and whether there are some links that might then motivate some hypotheses that allow us to do some additional testing in the future. So we have some ideas, you know, that we're going to be testing with some associational work within this survey. And then that's going to allow us to get a sense of, okay, so what do we actually have to do next to start to see if there's a way that we can assess causation here and see if this is in fact a side effect. And again, the whole purpose of this project is to reduce vaccine hesitancy because we actually think that menstruators more broadly really do deserve to be heard. They deserve their lived experiences to be honored. They deserve to not be derided and dismissed and laughed out of doctor's offices, as again, I have an inbox full of responses to share. And instead, what, you know, so our survey is not just about testing these associations, but actually spending the time bearing witness to these experiences. We have a number of open response boxes that allow people to share as fully and as much as they want, in addition to the fact that we have a bunch of, you know, multiple choice or select all that apply type answers that are going to help further our research. So again, we're trying to collect this not just because we're curious about this as like nerdy people who think periods are cool, though that's absolutely part of the reason. But the other reason really is because a lot of people have said, now that I know this might just be a side effect, I actually feel better. I don't feel alone. I don't feel like there's something wrong with me. And that's really, you know, at the end of the day, what we all should be doing if we want to reduce vaccine hesitancy.
Kate Clancy is Associate Professor of Anthropology at the University of Illinois. We've also been speaking with Catherine Lee, Postdoc Research Fellow in Public Health Sciences at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. And Tara Haley is the author of Vaccination Investigation, The History and Science of Vaccines. She's also a health journalist. Thank you all so much for being here today on the 21st.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.